Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, it's finally here. It's whiteout week. You ready for some whiteout football?
I think I am. It is a fun weekend always, and I do think that the rivalry with Iowa has ratcheted up a notch or two after the last injury finagling by the Iowa fans and Kirk Ferentz. So I think it'll be a fun Saturday night at Beaver Stadium.
I think it will. I think this is probably as close to a true rivalry that Penn State has within the Big Ten, so that'll be fun. We will get to Iowa a little bit later in the show. First, Jeff, here's what I want to do. A lot of Penn State fans, a lot of anxiety after Penn State, Illinois last week. You'd never know that they had won the game by, 17 points or so. But there are issues that came up. Here's what I want to do. I want to present to you these different issues, and I want to catch your level of concern. So let's start where I'm concerned. Let's start with the offensive line. Every year, this is the year. It's going to be better. It's going to be good. It's deeper. They're confident. It's going to be not just an average offensive line, it's going to be a good one. Did we see a good offensive line last week, and do you have any concerns with it?
Definitely have concerns, and in particular, as this whole season seems to come down to, it's with Ohio State and Michigan, how that O-line is going to hold up against two outstanding defensive fronts. And listen, Iowa is good too. I mean, this will be another good test this weekend. Yeah, I think there's definitely concern there. How much? I'm not sure just yet. I think we need to see, okay, after Illinois, what lessons were learned, and is it a situation where they're getting physically beat up front, in which case there's only so much you can do in season to try to rectify that. And one of the things may be that you start to see more of some of these younger guys that we have high expectations for in terms of their future careers. Maybe that future starts now. I don't know that we're there just yet in that regard, but I do think you need to see against a physical Iowa defense whether or not these guys can at least hold their own over the course of four quarters, and that you have a better feeling about it. I don't think it was crisis mode based on what you saw last week against Illinois. But yeah, there's some concern there about whether you can consistently run the ball against a good front that is geared up to try to stop the running game.
And I think you hit it there with the running game, where we came to expect so much from these two running backs after last year. I guess that's part of the equation too, Jeff. Are the expectations too high for the running game?
I don't think they are, because I think you have everything in place to have a really good running game. I think you have terrific tight ends, blocking tight ends, as well as receiving tight ends. But I mean, in terms of the running game, I think they have a couple of outstanding blockers. I think you have a receiving core that has bought into, we need to block when we're asked to block effectively as well. And I think, the other thing you need is a good passing game so that opposing defenses can't just stack up to stop the run. It's you can have everything in place, and if you don't have a passing game, right, your running game can be stagnant regardless. But obviously, with the, at the very least, the threat that Drew Aller and that receiving core brings game in and game out, you can't do that. So, yeah, this running game should be really solid and really effective. You've got great running backs. You've got a lot of things in place for it to be effective. And as you said, we should be seeing an at least markedly improved offensive line in a unit that, if not, you know, among the nation's best, should be solid. And if it's solid, Penn State should be putting up good numbers with the run game.
Jeff, yeah, I think the expectation level is for more than we saw from the offensive line against Illinois. It definitely is. Another area where I think the expectation is for better than what we saw against Illinois, those penalties. And, you know, there was the one, my take on it was that the penalties were so costly, happened at the wrong time. You have, I think it was Caden Wallace jump on third and one, it becomes third and six, and you don't convert. But those personal fouls where you're giving up 15 yards at a time, and yes, they also came at a third and two became third and 17, and another drive gets stopped by that. I know James Franklin really does not like those penalties, but they did happen. How much of a problem is that?
I think it's a very real concern, and I think it's something, obviously, they'll be working to address in practice, but they need to get it rectified in games. And again, the truth is, Jim, they can probably have another game with some costly penalties even against Iowa. I think Penn State is good enough right now athletically that you can overcome, you know, similar penalty problems against Iowa as you had against Illinois and still come out on top. Now, it might be uncomfortably close in that regard. And truthfully, I think you can get by Northwestern and Massachusetts with the same thing. The issue is, again, this season to me comes down to Ohio State and Michigan. You've got to at least go 1-1, and you're looking to go 2-0 in those games and take care of business against Maryland and Rutgers and everybody else, obviously, along the way as well. And yeah, you cannot win those games with those critical penalties in critical spots. So you need to get them cleaned up starting now against Iowa so that it is not an issue that you're trying to, you know, if it becomes an ongoing issue, then it's something that you obviously continue to work on and address, but then it becomes, it's just part of your identity. It's part of who you are. And I think the fact that we've had more penalties than you'd like in back-to-back games, now it is a concern. Again, I don't think it's time to write off this team because, yep, they're just too undisciplined, too many penalties. But, yeah, it needs to get rectified, and it needs to start this week against Iowa for you to have a good feeling and for this team to have a good chance to pull out, again, one or both of those games that are largely going to define this season later in the year.
You know, in watching that game, obviously I did on TV, I thought the officials did a poor job calling the personal fouls. Candidly, at least what they showed us on TV, I don't think any of them from both sides warranted a flag. I really don't. And I know the Keandre Lambert-Smith was the one they showed the little bit of a shove. To me, that's a the official just stepped between the two guys. Hey, let's settle this down. But it almost felt like they set the precedent early. We're throwing a flag, so we're going to continue throwing them for those. Now, with that said, a writer who was there mentioned that there was more going on with Lambert-Smith prior to what we saw on TV. But at the very least, I think James Franklin has to look at this as something that could be easily addressed. Discipline, especially after the whistle blows, should not be a tough task for the players.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it is about putting your team first, right? And not letting any kind of personal grievance get in the way of team success. And I'm with you. I don't think that was especially well officiated last week. But again, at the end of the day, you've just got to avoid as best you can putting yourself and thus your team in positions where those calls even can be made. And again, I'm not overly concerned. I mean, I'm not sitting here telling you that this is, you know, just a problem that's out of control for Penn State. But I do think Saturday night, right, you're looking to see, all right, let's get a relatively clean played game. I'm not looking for no penalties. I mean, I know James Franklin and every coach out there is looking for that. But I'm looking to, you know, let's get three or fewer. Let's just have it be the exception. And as you said, it's also the timing of it. On a third and one, you just can't be making a penalty that costs your team when the other team is in a third and less than five. You can't be giving them yardage freely. And so that's, you know, also part of the equation. It's not a huge concern for me right now, because I do think it's something that they'll get cleaned up, and I'm expecting this to be a pretty clean game on Saturday night. But listen, if we have another game where it's like eight penalties and 70 yards Saturday night, then yeah, I think this becomes a significant issue moving forward. And again, the good news is you still have a month to get it cleaned up before Ohio State.
Next on my list are those drops that we saw from the receivers. My take is I don't get as concerned as a lot of people do. I know they're costly, and I know in this particular game last week they were costly because they ended drives. But I think that has more to do with just nerves, focus, concentration. I'm not that concerned about them going forward. If it happens a couple of games in a row, I am. How about you?
Yeah, I think that for me it would be very disappointing, especially with the whiteout atmosphere, if you're having the penalty issues where the crowd should be working in your favor and causing penalty concerns and issues for the other team. So, you know, I guess we'll know better maybe after this Iowa game whether or not this is a real concern moving forward. For me, it's much more right now, at least, about the lines. And, you know, we talked about the offensive line, and I think the interior of the defensive line, those are the two things that to me are still the biggest question moving forward when you're talking about the matchups with Ohio State and Michigan.
Very good. And as Joel Klatt put it on the coverage of during the broadcast, everything that we watch as Penn State people is through that prism of Michigan and Ohio State. And there's a lot of truth to that. That's the way we have to look at everything. All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter number one. Stick around. Lots more to go, starting with quarter number two.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. We're wrapping up last week. Going to get ready for whiteout this week. Jeff, I wanted to follow up on, I was giving you some of my concerns, or the concerns that I hear from our listeners about this team based off of last week's game. I want to talk about Drew Aller in this game. And there was a lot of talk, this is his first road game, first road test. I thought it was going into it, it was a good game for that challenge. This wasn't Michigan, this wasn't Ohio State. This wasn't a hostile, you know, crowd. It wasn't Iowa at night. So I don't know how much of that was an issue. But coming out of this game, we had a couple things going on in the passing game. There were some drops by the receivers. That could have an effect on the quarterback. But we also saw a couple things that we hadn't seen from Drew Aller before. I think this is the first game where we heard the announcers say, oh, there was some miscommunication between the quarterback and the receivers. I think this is the first game that we heard, oh, he had a wide open Lambert Smith. If he just saw him, it was a touchdown. We didn't hear that before. You had Theo Johnson open in the end zone, and Drew Aller overthrew him. We didn't see that the first couple games. So is there any concerns from you there about Drew Aller's game coming out of that Illinois game?
Not really. I think it was a good game for him to get under his belt, like you said, for all of those reasons. Truthfully, through the first two games, there was not much adversity there for Penn State, and most of the adversity that was there was kind of self-inflicted. Illinois, I thought, did a really good job defensively trying to get pressure and getting pressure in some cases. As you said, there it was one of those days where, again, when Aller did put the ball on the money, there were some drops. When there were open receivers, sometimes Aller missed them. Sometimes Aller didn't have as much time as he's used to and as you'd like or expect in that game. And it was his first road game, and I do think that plays some role in the overall play. That being said, I think he had a good day. Wasn't a spectacular day, but I think it was a good day overall. And I think it is a game that he and the offense will learn a lot from and will be better for it down the road. And I think much the same thing. I think they'll see some similar things against Iowa and some different things. And I think, you know, one of the things when you're playing in the Big Ten is you're going to see a lot of different looks from defenses. They're going to be trying to confuse your offense just as your offense is trying to confuse their defense. And I think, yeah, every now and then you're going to have a receiver and a quarterback making different reads on in a particular situation, and you're going to have that miscommunication. I think it is big that even through all of that, Drew Aller still has not turned the ball over once. And I get that there's a couple of plays there, both against Illinois and against West Virginia, where there could have been a turnover, but there wasn't. And at the end of the day, even if you had two turnovers through three games, right, I think you're feeling pretty good about your offense. But the fact that Penn State joins Oregon as the only FBS schools with no turnovers through three games, to me, is significant. And it's a big part of the equation right now for Penn State looking to have the season that it's wanting to have. So if Drew Aller comes out and this offense has the same problems that we saw against Illinois with the whiteout at home, okay, now it's becoming a bigger concern. For me right now, I'm looking at it as, listen, that is part of the growing process, part of the maturity process, both for the quarterback and the offense as a whole. I'm expecting and wanting to see progress this week against a good Iowa defense. And then, obviously, looking down the road, you want to see that offense kind of finely tuned when you need it for a couple of games that are going to be pretty big later in the year.
Well, it's also kind of the old, Jeff, I think with a young quarterback, there's going to be a couple bumps in the road. It's going to happen. You'd much rather have that in a game where you're up 30-7 at the start of the fourth quarter and could have the starter sit down.
Well, and the other thing, Jim, yes. And the other thing is with Trey Wallace out, we've been talking all year that I don't think if any one player goes down that this team is going to be greatly impacted. And I'll stand by that to a degree, but I do think Trey Wallace has been kind of the dependable guy that Drew Aller knows is there and that he can rely on. And it's not that I think he's looking at anybody else in that receiving core and saying, oh, I don't know if I can trust them, even after the Illinois game. But I just think Wallace was such a consistent presence in that receiving core. And I think getting him back, as I'm presuming he will be Saturday night, is a big part of the equation here just for the overall comfort level of both Drew Aller and the offense as a whole.
I think you're right. And it sounded like the way James Franklin spoke that if he had to, Wallace could have played last week, which gives me the impression he'll be ready this week, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm assuming that as well, but I guess we'll find out Saturday night.
And the other part to this is Malik McClain, those drops, which were egregious, and this may seem counterintuitive, but I look at it, those passes were should have been such easy catches that it causes me less concern, because you know it's not a case where he can't catch that kind of pass. It was nerves. It was something else. It was that first start, lack of focus, or game just going a little quick, you know, for his first start. Let me shift to another issue, and this is perhaps me bringing this up more than anybody else. I had the feeling that Illinois' defensive coaching staff was one step ahead of Penn State's coaching staff all day. And it feels like over the years, we too often hear, well, the other team, you know what? They did something we didn't expect. Both teams are there. Can't you make adjustments in the game? You know, when is it that Penn State does something that the other team hadn't seen? So, like, remember a couple years ago when Illinois, they put so many offensive linemen in. It seemed like they had 10 offensive linemen in. Well, we hadn't seen that before. We didn't expect that. It felt that way a bit with this year Illinois' defense. Is that a legitimate concern, Jeff?
I think that Penn State has been purposely fairly vanilla. I do think the Trey Potts pass was a reaction to what they were seeing and what they were getting from the Illinois defense. And I do think that was an adjustment or, you know, a great play call by Mike Yurcich and the staff. So I do think they were looking at some things. I could be wrong on this. I mean, I just think that there are some things that they are, some wrinkles that they are going to unveil, maybe starting Saturday night. But I think there are some things that they're going to hold off on until they feel like they truly need it. And, you know, the hope would be that would be, you know, at least not until the Maryland game, and maybe not until you get to Ohio State and then Michigan. But I think that this is a team. I think this is an offense that has a lot at its disposal. And I think in any particular situation, you can catch a defense off guard. I'm not especially worried at this point because, I just don't think we've seen anywhere close to the entire playbook that this team has at its disposal. And I think we'll start to see it again. I thought we saw, obviously, the wrinkle with the Potts pass. But, I mean, I think you're seeing some little wrinkles here and there. I think it'll continue to expand. And I think that they're it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm not saying it's zero concern. It's just not high on my concern list right now.
And I get it. You know, the counterpoint to what I'm saying, Jeff, is, Jim, you're complaining when we were up 30-7 and we put our starting quarterback on the bench with almost an entire fourth quarter to go. So I understand the counterpoint to it, but I think it has to be out there.
Yeah, well, and listen, Illinois' defense was ranked whatever it was, 125th or something in the country going into that game. So even though I think Illinois' defense is better than that, you know, the fact is you would expect an offense with a quarterback like Drew Aller and running backs like Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton to put up more than 30 points against a defense like that. So, I mean, I think it's a fair criticism. I just think the criticism, at least at this point, ought to be pretty mild. And let's see, you know, how this team and offense grows and reacts to it moving forward.
Well, you know, Jeff, it's our job to make a big deal out of little things.
Well, and we do it well.
That's what we were trained to do. The other Absolutely. Thing, and this, again, maybe making a big thing out of a little thing, where there was a specific play where I saw that the zone read where the quarterback has the option of pulling the ball out of the running back and keep it himself. it doesn't appear that Drew Aller is ever a threat to do that. Do you feel that's that first of all, that it's the case, and that maybe that's the coaches saying, hey, Drew, we don't want you getting the carries. We have Nick Singleton. We want the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I mean, I think there may be spots where you're like, hey, go, you know, if you see it, go ahead and take it. And again, this may be part of trying to set things up for down the road, too. I mean, I don't know if they're specifically telling Drew, listen, do not under any circumstance through these first four games, you know, we're just handing the ball off in those situations and carry it out. And then when we need it, it may be there against a bigger opponent. I have no idea if the degree to which you try to set stuff like that up. But I think that's a possibility. But yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, would I rather see Catron Allen, Nicholas Singleton, or Drew Aller running with the football? Aller is a very definitive third on that list for me. When you have running backs like you have, yeah, use them, let them run. Again, it doesn't mean that you never use Aller, but you know, after watching Kenny Pickett try to run the ball for the Steelers on Monday night, I think I'm okay with my quarterback not running the football.
All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter two. Stick around. We got lots more coming in quarter three.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. We are talking Penn State, Iowa. It is whiteout week. Jeff, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about just the whiteout game in general. Now, you're stationed in State College. You're there every day. Is there something different when we get to a whiteout week?
I think there is now. I think there's just a different energy, and I think fans buy into the idea that we can have an impact on the game, and we want to make sure we put on the show that the nation now comes to expect with the whiteout game. So I do think it's become something that is special and really even above and beyond football. It's just become a spectacle. And I do think it is something that fans, the average fans and the bandwagon fans and everybody wants to kind of jump in and be a part of. So, yeah, I do think it's something that is special. And I think the fans almost feel an obligation to step up and fulfill the expectation of the whiteout experience.
There's no doubt the fans feel like they are part of the show and they feel the obligation to perform, and they do. One of the other things that goes on that I think a lot of folks miss is just how important this weekend is for recruiting. This is where you have your biggest recruiting in-season recruiting weekend, Jeff.
Yeah. Listen, you cannot help, right? I think if you're a high school kid and you're looking around at that stadium and experiencing that environment, at least in the moment, you have to be thinking, boy, this would be a really cool thing to be part of in the future. I mean, it is a, no question, it is a great selling point for Penn State. And I mean, there's a reason they bring in as many recruits as they can for this weekend. They know it is an overwhelming type of experience, and it is one that very few places can come close to replicating. And so, yeah, hats off to Guido D'Elia and everybody that had a hand in putting it together initially, and the sustained success. And again, it's just almost become an entity unto itself. And it's just a fun night, and it's something that everybody circles once you find out when the whiteout game is on your calendar for the upcoming year.
Definitely, without a doubt. And what I find intriguing is how often, when you see a recruit who makes a commitment when he's interviewed, okay, what tipped the scale? What made you want to go to Penn State? And how often, Jeff, that they reference the whiteout game?
Yeah, it is. It's just, again, it is an experience when you're down on that field and you're looking up at the mass of white, and you can't hear yourself think, it's so loud, and you see the shakers in the student section and all of the production qualities that are there with the Beaver Stadium crew. It can't help but make an impression.
Now, this year, and we talked about this some during the off season, for many years it was very simple. Penn State alternated home and away games with Michigan and Ohio State. Whichever one was the home game this year, that was the whiteout game. That would be at night. This year, or the last couple of years, has changed now with Fox being part of the equation, and Fox not necessarily wanting their best game at night. They're saying they're putting the big game on at noon. So essentially, it came down to, all right, Michigan at noon, or Iowa in September at night. Did they make the right choice?
I think they did, because I think the whiteout game needs to be at night. I do think the build up during the course of the day and the aura of having an entirely white stadium, or darn close to it, under the lights is part of the impact and the effect there. And, you know, the Michigan game is going to be huge regardless, right? Like, that, nobody's going to be, you know, oh yeah, it's just Michigan, but it's not a whiteout game. I mean, you're going to be jacked for the Michigan game, especially obviously if they get to that stage of the season and both teams are undefeated, or, you know, at least, and we're certainly expecting that neither team will have more than one loss, going into that game, that it's going to be a huge game in and of itself. I think in an ideal world, you'd want Michigan to be the whiteout game at night. But with the circumstances being what they are, yes, to me, this is the right call. And there's enough history there with Iowa that I think fans can justifiably get a little extra juiced for the Iowa game. Especially with it being a whiteout contest now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it has to be a night game. One of the questions, there's been discussion too. We now have CBS in the equation, especially NBC now as part of the deal, and NBC does have night games. It leads to this, perhaps Penn State Michigan was going to be on Fox at noon no matter what, and we know that TV rules the day. But there's also that Big Ten thing about not having night games in November. And I still can't understand how anybody got caught off guard when the contract with NBC is, we're doing night games. We're doing Saturday night games. I guess my question is, does the Big Ten need to say, you know what, maybe we got to revisit that whole no night games in November deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Big Ten is, I understand the cold weather and the concerns there at night, but it's football and weather is part of it. And I just think that's, you deal with it. And I think, to me, and you know, maybe this is just I don't know if this is a generational thing or not. I do like the bigger games being night games or at least late afternoon games. Again, do I think Michigan at noon isn't as big as if it was at 7:30? No, it's still every bit as big, every bit as important, all of that. But I just think you want those games, to me, at least later in the day. Let the fan base build up the enthusiasm, shall we say, the liquid enthusiasm. But, you know, let them build up the anticipation a little bit and let the stadium get rocking. And I just think that's easier to do with at least a 3:30 kickoff or a night game than it is with a noon kickoff.
Jeff, are we just the old-fashioned guys who still think, you know, it should be the best interest of the game itself, the fans showing up at the game, versus having TV being the tail wagging the dog? It's pretty obvious now, this is a Fox issue. And television-wise, Fox made a smart decision. CBS with Southeast Conference is on at 3:30. ABC, ESPN, they have their biggest game at night. There was a slot there at noon where you didn't have big games previously, and Fox made a smart television decision. But did college football sell their soul?
Well, I mean, you could argue, yes, that happened a long, long time ago, probably back in the 1980s. But college football isn't alone. A lot of sports, you know, we've talked about the number of sports that have changed their rules. I mean, women's volleyball most notably went from, match scoring. Is that what it was called? But anyways, to rally scoring, where you get a point now on every serve. And that was for television. And you could argue, and many did at the time, that is altering the very nature of the sport. I mean, you're talking about a fundamental aspect of the sport that they're like, oh yeah, no, we got to get on TV, so we'll forget that. Yes, to answer your question, but understandably so, given the money and the stakes that are involved. And again, there are not many sports. In fact, I can't think of one that is like, nope, we've got to stick to our principles, even if it means we're not getting TV or media exposure. Maybe there is a sport out there that's done it. I'm not familiar with it, though.
It's true. It's just the question becomes, where is the line? And regular listeners of our show know that currently one of Jim's pet peeves is the new rule that says on third down, on getting first downs, the clock doesn't stop anymore, which in essence reduces the amount of football. And this past week, there's been some of the articles out. I'm calling them propaganda, Jeff, because it says, oh, fans are saying that means more commercials. No, it doesn't. We did the examination. It's the exact same number of commercials. Well, here's my question to that, Jeff. You kept the same amount of commercials, but you reduced the amount of football. So the ratio of commercials to actual football has changed, right?
Correct. And it just, again, this isn't one of those, like, you know, baseball was reacting to a fan base that said these games are going too long. Maybe there were some people. I never heard anybody anywhere say, yeah, the problem with college football is these games are just taking too doggone long. I have not heard that. Now, I get the TV windows are what they are, and they want to make sure that the games are over from one window going into the next and all of that. So, I mean, it makes sense from the network's standpoint. But, yeah, to me, you're solving a problem that didn't exist, and I don't think the fans are the winners in this again.
Yes, and if it's that block of time, and I've said this before, we saw it this past week, start the game at noon when you say it starts at noon. Don't start it at 12:10. I just saved 10 minutes, Jeff. Yep. And You know, college halftime is 20 minutes. NFL halftime is 12. Guess what? Why don't you take away some of the halftime? Anyway, I will get off that topic. We're going to talk about Iowa, I promise, come quarter four.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. Jeff, I promised it. We're going to do it. We're going to talk specifically about this Iowa game. Iowa has been a bit of a thorn in Penn State's side over the last couple of years. It has turned into a rivalry game for different reasons. You had, you know, Penn State actually a walk-off touchdown in Iowa a few years ago, memorable game. A couple of years ago, we had the injury gate where not only the Iowa fans, but the Iowa coach saying, something fishy going on here. So that seems to have upped the excitement a bit, upped the rivalry between these two. But let's talk about this Iowa team itself. They are like Illinois in that they want to slow the game down, have long drives, run the ball, keep it low scoring, play good defense. But this defense that Iowa plays is a bit different than what Illinois does.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think the balance of this Penn State offense is what I'm looking to see Saturday night. And can they, you know, kind of keep Iowa off guard with, you know, little swing passes to the running backs or quick hitters to the tight end? And, you know, I think part of what Penn State would like to do is get that offense in rhythm. And obviously Iowa wants to prevent that from happening. But I think Iowa can play a little more straight up than Illinois and feel like it has a chance to match up with Penn State. I think this is one of those games where Drew Aller could get things going early, and then you see the running backs kind of take over the game in the second half for Penn State. It feels like one of those games where the opportunity at least will be there for the passing game to set up the running game rather than the other way around. But, you know, truthfully, what I'm most curious about in this matchup, Jim, is how this Penn State defense and, you know, the interior of the defensive line in particular, but the defense as a whole, handles that Iowa run game. And to me, that is going to go a long way toward determining how close this game is Saturday night, but also how confident I think Penn State fans should feel about Ohio State and especially Michigan later in the season.
Okay, well, let's talk about that situation that Manny Diaz will have. What does he do specifically to stop Iowa and the run game?
Yeah, I think that they dare Iowa to throw the ball a little bit. If I'm them, I'm keeping the linebackers focused on the run game. I'm bringing seven or even eight from time to time in the box. But I also think, you know, picking your spots with the schemes, and we've talked a lot about the number of different ways that this Penn State defense can approach opposing offenses. I do think keeping the guys fresh on the defensive line, and that's obviously been a consistent theme for Penn State even before Diaz, but certainly with Manny Diaz, is rotating those guys through and keeping them fresh. I think that is a critical component here on Saturday night. The other thing is, you know, gang tackling, getting guys, you know, not relying on the first hit to be making the tackle. But with that is, as the second, third, fourth guys get in there, you've got to be looking to get the football. I mean, turnovers have obviously been a big part of the equation here for Penn State and for any team's success. And I think that is one of the things that Penn State ought to be dialed in here on Saturday night is, can we create a couple of opportunities just by getting everybody flying to the football and, you know, somebody punching that football out of there and get an extra possession or two.
And I think that translates, Jeff, into, instead of this, okay, wait for that third down situation, third and long, it becomes a first down and second down situation to get Iowa out of rhythm, get them, as the saying now is, get them behind the chains, right?
Yeah, and I think we fans, and I think a lot of media members think of blitzing as getting after the quarterback. You can have really effective run blitzes where you're trying to hit the, you know, hit gaps and shut off the running game as well. And I think that's I'm curious to see what the approach is here for Penn State, because I do think they have some really good tacklers in the secondary. And I think there are some things that you can do. You know, normally you're like, not good if your safety or your quarterbacks are making the tackles, because the thinking is they've gotten to the third level. I'm saying here on Saturday night, I'm expecting there will be spots. I don't think it's going to be consistent all night long. You have 11 guys flying to the line of scrimmage, but I do think that where they are smelling run, you may have some spots where you're bringing some guys up from the secondary, again, looking to shoot gaps, looking to get in there and make plays in the backfield or at the line of scrimmage.
And the other part to that, Jeff, is having a trust in your defensive backs. Let them on an island and trust that. Especially, I don't think, you know, with Iowa's receivers, Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't walking into that room anytime soon for Iowa. So I would trust, you know, the Kalen King and Johnny Dixon and Daquan Hardy one-on-one, isolate them. I'm not thinking that Cade McNamara is going to be a great threat to them.
And especially if you're getting the pressure that you'd be expecting to get then, right? It's not like he's going to have time to, maybe those receivers, if they make a couple of moves, can get a little bit of separation. But the idea obviously would be they don't have time to do that because McNamara is going to be swarmed under. I do think this is a game, you know, we've had very high expectations for the defensive end play. And I don't think it's been bad through the first three games, but it hasn't been the type of impact that I think that many of us were expecting at the start of the season. I think this game is a game where you need to see and will see the defensive ends be a disruptive force and be the players that are game changers. And I think that is a critical component to this game, and, you know, moving forward, I think it needs to be in Big Ten play for this team to have the success that they're looking for this season.
I'm with you, Jeff. I think the mindset of the Penn State defense, and I know it always is, but even more so with this game, is to be disruptive, to make things happen. And occasionally, you might have Iowa forced to throw the ball and maybe connect on a big play once in a while. I say I'd rather that happen than have Iowa methodically march the ball down the field and keep the ball away from Penn State's offense.
Yeah, and it's a risk-reward thing, and I think with this defense and the playmakers that you have there, that, yeah, you take that risk of giving up a big play or two over the course of four quarters, because you're banking on your team, the defense, being disruptive enough that it's going to create more than a couple of big plays for themselves. And again, you're looking for some game-changing plays. I mean, a big sack that, you know, changes you know, the entire offensive play calling for a series, or a turnover, or, again, a couple of plays that back the offense back up toward their goal line and changes the entire field position around. And I think over four quarters, this defense against Iowa's offense should be able to do that. And again, I'm excited to see. I think part of the fun of this matchup is the coaching matchup and what both teams try to do and what they dial up in some key situations. That's going to be part of the fun to me Saturday night is seeing how the coaches are approaching this, because I think there's a bunch of different ways you can approach both of these teams. I think Penn State needs to stop the run first. I suspect that's what Iowa is thinking it needs to do against Penn State as well. And that, in theory, should open up opportunities for both of these quarterbacks to try to exploit opportunities in the opposing defense. I just think Penn State is much more better positioned to do that against this Iowa defense and Iowa secondary than Iowa is going to be able to against that Penn State secondary.
And I do think Penn State will need to go against the grain a bit, throw the ball on traditional running downs, even first down especially.
I agree with you. I think early on, again, if I'm Penn State and you know, I'm in charge of the offense, and we can all thank God that that is not the case. But I am coming out and I am trying to get Drew Aller in a rhythm early. Little swing passes, quick hitters to the tight end, quick hitters to the wide receivers. But I want to get him in a rhythm and then, you know, soften up the Iowa defense a little bit and then, you know, both get the run game going. And I do think this is a game. My bold prediction, if you will, this week is that Penn State will have a touchdown pass play of over 70 yards against the Hawkeyes. I think at some point, maybe at a couple of points, Penn State hits it big in the pass game because of the way they set things up early.
Considering we haven't seen much of that, Jeff, yes, that will qualify as a bold prediction. Now I need your prediction of how this game is going to go and a final score.
You know, it is hard for me, Jim, because the Penn State-Iowa game traditionally is really close, right? I think four of the last six, is it, that have been decided by six. There's exceptions to it. But my gut feeling going into this game, and I've predicted Penn State to win big in each of the first three, I don't think Penn State wins big. I think they win comfortable, but not as comfortable as fans would really like. So I think this ends up being a game that is in that 7 to 12 point range in Penn State's favor throughout, where you're like, yeah, Penn State's in good shape, but man, they're not putting the game away. I think they eventually do put it away in the fourth quarter, and I have it 31-13 Penn State.
Very good. I had it 34-10. I'm with you. I've been waiting all year, and the interesting thing is, as you know, I'll use the spread to determine the expectation. And Penn State has beaten their spread in all three games. I'm picking that they will still do that despite that 14-point spread or 14.5-point spread. Jeff, that has to be it for our show. We're out of time. Thank you all for joining us. Enjoy the game this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are